This week marks the one-year anniversary of the Hurricane Katrina disaster, the Category 5 monster hurricane that pounded the Gulf Coast, killing more than 1,300 people and leaving hundreds of thousands displaced. In New Orleans, more than 200,000 people have not been able to return home. Internally displaced people have an international human right to return to their homes, and the government has a responsibility to help them do so. This process is not yet fulfilled. Environmental human rights also pose serious risks, as New Orleans residents have been urged by government agencies to move back into their homes, this despite contaminants that have leached deep into the soil and mold that contaminates the air. According to Reuters, Asian tsunami relief workers who visited New Orleans this summer were shocked at the lack of recovery. We're joined today by Executive Director of Mississippi Workers Center for Human Rights, Jeribu Hill. Jeribu Hill, welcome to Law and Disorder.
Thank you.
Jeribu, it's been a year since the Hurricane Katrina disaster really wiped out the Gulf Coast region. Can you tell us what has changed and what hasn't 1 year later?
Well, unfortunately, in terms of infrastructure, in terms of rebuilding actual lives of people who were the most affected, not much has changed. Still far too many people are living in FEMA trailers. Up until about 2 months ago, people were even still living in tents, and we're told that there are still some tent sightings on the Gulf Coast, particularly in East Biloxi and also in New Orleans as well. In addition to the problem, no housing for people who lost everything, there's also the issue with health care. There's the issue with school children who were out of school for close to 2 weeks before being able to return to the classroom and having no supplies, having no resources when they return, and the ongoing problem of joblessness, where workers literally lost their jobs because their jobs went underwater. And at that time, particularly in the Mississippi Gulf Coast region, some 3,000 casino workers had just been unionized through the grand casino industry. And, of course, they all lost their jobs and any hope of any job security for the near future. Then you have hundreds of people who still are reported missing. You have people who are missing and presumed dead, like the 60 or so Jamaican women who are domestic workers in Biloxi working for the Grand Casino, who had no transportation of their own and had to be picked up every day by their employer and returned home every day by their employer. And apparently they were not picked up. They are presumed to have been buried alive in the rubble. And so those kinds of horror stories continue to mount up and continue to be glaring evidence of not only the benign neglect that we were experiencing right after Katrina, but the continuous benign neglect in terms of accurate accounts of where people are, in terms of accurate statistics, in terms of people being able to participate in even conversations that would lead to their full participation in the rebuilding efforts, if in fact there are any real rebuilding efforts. We've seen mostly development efforts around casinos getting back up and running and business people getting their pockets lined again, but we have not seen any evidence of an all-out campaign to build decent and affordable housing.
I understand that the government uses the figure of $44 billion as what's been designated for the rebuilding project or the rebuilding effort. Have you seen that money come into the community?
Well, from what we've seen, we would categorically say no, we have not seen that money, nor have we seen the plan for how that money is going to be spent. We recall 2 months after Katrina, Haley Barbour, governor of Mississippi, started having meetings. These meetings were exclusionary meetings, meetings where developers, architects, politicians, and the like were invited to these closed meetings. And in fact, when people called to find out about the meetings and get an itinerary or a schedule of where the meetings were going to be, they were told that the meetings were closed to community people and closed to the press. Only after forcibly pushing our way on to be invited to one of the meetings did Haley Barbour finally allow people to come to one of the meetings. And when we got to the meeting, the interesting thing was that even during the Q&A, it was so controlled that people were not even able to ask their questions. Their questions were read out, and then they were told that experts would contact them with the answers. And, of course, no one has ever been contacted with the answers to their questions. And so for us, we still see the same lockout, the same exclusionary policies that were in place before, and the same grinding poverty overall on the Gulf Coast. If you look at the casino culture, yes, there are people who go there and gamble, but you also know that amidst that playland kind of atmosphere and Disneyland type atmosphere, there is grinding poverty, low wages, and conditions that have been unbearable even before Katrina and are now even more unbearable.
If I could go over the figures for a second, as I understand it, $110 billion has been designated in total for the rebuilding project. They said out of that, $44 billion has already been spent. A total of $77 billion has been released, and $33 billion is earmarked for future rebuilding efforts. So $77 billion has been released, and the people of the Gulf Coast don't even know to whom this money has been released?
Yes, that is in a nutshell, and you've described the problem to a T. Because what we are demanding is not only an accounting of how the money is being spent, but we're demanding actual plans for actually putting people's lives back together. And how do you do that without putting people back in house? How do you do that with making sure that employers keep their word about reopening businesses and putting people back to work? The government cannot talk about the total amount of money being allocated without also talking about how that money is going to be spent, who is going to be doing what. And looking at the contractors that are brought into the Gulf Coast region, mostly from the outside of the region, coming in and exploiting workers by not paying them. If they don't speak English, if they are Spanish-speaking workers, they are sure to be told that they're not going to get the full top dollar that they deserve, or they're not going to get paid at all. And so you have groups like the Mississippi Immigrants' Rights Alliance fighting for back wages and fighting for wages that were not paid and getting employers to release some $600,000 in back pay for people. So profits are being made, but the people who are benefiting from those profits being made are the business concerns and not the sufferers. We see a situation where it's a powder keg. We see people living hand to mouth, barely making ends meet, not knowing when they're going to be put back in their homes, living in trailers. The tension is mounting. We see no direct, tangible relief, and we see no real response from government. We see only Band-Aid solutions. We don't see the kind of major surgery that needs to take place.
What are some of the biggest challenges that the Mississippi Workers Center has been working on?
We worked on two fronts. One, we started out working right away on the issue of race and class disparity with respect to the way the resources were dispensed. And everything that you heard about the way the Red Cross and FEMA went about their daily work is true.
Revisit that for us.
Yes, we were in East Biloxi right after the storm, and we saw horrible images of destruction and disruption of people's lives. And we saw the same images that you see when you go to the Ninth Ward. In fact, East Biloxi is our Ninth Ward. We also saw the disparities in terms of the difference in even in terms of the shelters. The shelters that were located in East Biloxi were substandard. The shelters that were located in D'Iberville, which is a middle-class community, fairly racially mixed community, were not substandard. In fact, the Red Cross station in D'Iberville had, not only was it state-of-the-art, it also had a health clinic on site. The Red Cross station in East Biloxi had a cardboard sign on. We went there, and we were shown the sign that said 3 meals a day. It was crossed out, 2 meals a day, and then there was a cross out that said 1 meal, and then there was another cross out that said 0 meals. So Rip Daniels, one of the local radio personalities who owns his own station, was advertising to people and telling them, look, go to D'Iberville because that's where the Red Cross is fully set up. You can get water. You can get relief. You can get vouchers if you only go to D'Iberville. Well, why did people have to go to D'Iberville instead of going where they live? The reason is because the resources were not evenly and equally distributed. We saw FEMA trucks and vans riding past East Biloxi on their way to the affluent communities where they had their orders to go first to pick up debris and to investigate whether debris was being removed and if not, when. And we were in East Biloxi where people were just living behind mounds of debris and smelling unbelievable stench every day, from dead body stench to rotten food from refrigerators were obviously in disrepair and destroyed because of the storm, to debris where the insurance company people refused to go into certain people's houses because they said that they could not get into the houses. Then we dealt with unscrupulous landlords who took it as an opportunity to say to people, we want you out. And in one situation in the Haven community in Gulfport, Mississippi, the landlord told people, we want you out in 5 days. He put these shady notices on people's doors without letterhead or anything telling them that they wanted them out in 5 days. And, of course, that was not lawful. And so we challenged it. We wrote a strong demand letter. And just on the strength of the demand letter, he started backing up and saying, okay, I'm not going to evict people. But his plan was to evict people out of apartments that had not even been that damaged. He was going to evict them and begin to warehouse these apartments and make condos out of them and make top dollar by kicking these low-income people out. And so that kind of unscrupulous behavior from New Orleans, a Quality Inn hotel, which kicked people out, and we stopped them from doing that by getting a court order. That was done through the student hurricane relief people and the Common Ground folks and the Workers Center working together. We were able to stop them from putting people out on the street who had no place else to go. And so these kinds of issues that came up right after the storm persist today. The same people who didn't have housing then don't have housing now. The same people who were living in FEMA trailers. In fact, it took some folks as long as January to get a FEMA trailer. And some people who were disabled were living in FEMA trailers that were not accessible and had to be carried in and out of the trailer to add insult to injury, to add to the indignation of poverty and hopelessness. You have a situation where you're not mobile because you can't walk. Now you got to be carried in and out of your house. And the doorway was not wide enough for your wheelchair to get in. So your wheelchair has to sit outside and be subjected to the elements. And you have to worry about whether it's going to be stolen or whether it's going to be rusted out if it rains because the wheelchair can't come into the trailer. So those kinds of situations still persist today. We know a few people whose lives are basically up and running again, though not at the level where they were before. But most people that we talk to, including workers we talk to, from the jobs that they lost to the homes that they lost, they still are in a very vicarious situation today.
Jeribu Hill, I just want to remind our listeners, you're the executive director with Mississippi's Workers Center for Human Rights. Have you had any experience with the Small Business Administration, loans, insurance companies, both government and business not doing what they should do to help these people?
Yes. In fact, we represented a couple of people who had been told in lieu of getting insurance benefits, they should apply for these small business loans to get homeowner mortgages paid off. And, of course, that was misinformation, and we prepared and filed some complaints with the Better Business Bureau to that effect. But also, we have just seen rampant insurance denials where people should not have been denied and where they have been denied. At one point, the Attorney General Jim Hood of the state of Mississippi declared a moratorium on insurance denials through a TRO that he filed. But that did not stop insurance companies from still going ahead in some cases and denying people benefits where they had been paying premiums for 30 years plus. And suddenly they were told, oh, it was a flood and you didn't have flood insurance. Well, it was a hurricane, and a byproduct of the hurricane was the rushing waters. And now you're going to say that this is just an ordinary flood, and you're going to deny people coverage and recovery that they're entitled to and that they've paid for. You see a lot of fraudulent conduct on behalf of insurance companies and some of the building organizations.
Drew, but a lot of people for the first time have come to understand after Katrina that human rights violations happen in the United States. Can you tell us how human rights violations have occurred in the whole Katrina aftermath?
Yeah, and I'm amazed that some people actually, and I look at them and I know that they're not lying when they say to me, my God, I didn't know this kind of stuff was going on in America. But yes, you're right. Some of the most stark examples have been the treatment of workers, particularly immigrant workers, particularly low-wage African-American workers. For example, in the shipyard, the Northrop Grumman shipyard, workers were told to come back to work a few days after the hurricane. They were told to come back regardless of the shift that they worked on, to come back during the day shift. When they reported to work, there were no lights. there were generators and very, very dimly lit buildings and quarters that they were supposed to work in. They were tripping and falling. There were serious accidents that occurred because workers were forced to come back to work before the facilities were even up and running again, and they were threatened with come back to work now or we'll assume that you don't want your jobs. We've seen human rights violations around issues concerning working without pay in the form of what we would call involuntary service. Because the last time people worked for free was in slavery. But they've been working people pay because they're very vulnerable in terms of their immigration status, or they perceive them to be vulnerable because of their immigration status. One of the most stark examples of human rights violations, because we do believe it's not just a cliche when you say housing is a human right. The very basic level of subsistence has to do with where you live and how you live, and so the quality of life issues that people have had to face are certainly related to the human rights abuses that they've had to suffer. Then the failure of government to allow people to participate is another human rights abuse, because we know that you have a human right to participate in government. And once you elect your officials, which is also a human right, you have a right to expect that they're going to be both to you and that they're going to involve you in the processes, and we see that that cannot happen as well. To add insult to injury, we see stark abuse and misconduct like you wouldn't believe, people being rounded up and accused of looting simply because they procured food their children were about to go hungry, and criminalized because they were in the midst of a storm when you saw the image of the white couple coming and saying they had found food, and the African-American man who had found food being called a looter. It's true, the double standard, the racism.
There were two captions from two Yahoo pictures where white people taking food were described as people finding food, and black people taking food were described as thieves who were stealing and looting. We're so happy that you were able to join us, Drew Buhill, Executive Director of the Mississippi Workers' Center. Please tell our listeners, what is it going to take to change the situation, and how can they participate?
People are going to have to mobilize like they've never mobilized before. It's going to take serious organizing combined with really progressive advocacy, and that there has to be a response across the country. There has to be a series of direct actions where people are challenging their state houses about Katrina, because you have displaced people scattered across the country. And so this is in all of our interest to raise these issues in solidarity with people who have been pushed out and discarded the way that they've been, that we have to see this as an issue that affects everyone and not just people who live on the Gulf Coast. We have to challenge this government in ways that we've never challenged it before. Progressive legal organizations like the Guild and human rights organizations like Amnesty. And now more than ever, we have to step up to the plate and to see what kinds of things we can file, what can we take to the Inter-American Commission, what can we take next time we go to Geneva to show the human rights abuses that the U.S. continues to allow in this country, the difference between the way people treated after the tsunami and after 9/11 and now. These are stark differences. These are stark representations, because New Orleans was a predominantly black city, how people were allowed to just simply die by drowning it. And that happened because of the race divide that we continue to experience. And racism is a human rights abuse, because the first principle, as we all know, is the right of equality. And some people have denied that right since birth. And we have to fight for human rights in this country like we've never fought for it before. Katrina is a glaring reminder of the continuing and ongoing human rights abuses right here in the richest country in the world.
Drew Buhill, Executive Director with the Mississippi Workers Center for Human Rights, thank you so much for joining us on Law and Disorder.
Thank you so much for having me.